Our next case today is number 06-2389, Mary R. Squibb against Memorial Medical Center.
Good morning.
Ms. Hayes, there is a lever on the right-hand side of your rostrum. The clerk would be glad to show you. If you'd like to lower that rostrum a little bit and be a little bit more comfortable with it.
Thank you. My name is Patricia Hayes, and I represent Mary Rios Squibb in this action. And we basically have, this is an ADA case, and we have brought 10 issues before the court. Basically, what happened is that the district court granted summary judgment on this ADA case, and we're asking the court to reverse the district court. First and foremost, we feel that the court erred in resolving issues of material fact against the plaintiff and holding the plaintiff to a heightened burden of proof in finding her whether or not she was a disabled person under the ADA.
Well, Ms. Hayes, maybe we could begin at the beginning and you could help us out with the question of whether or not your client's condition is a disability for purposes of the Act. The Act, of course, defines whether a person is disabled, and I had a hard time figuring out what major life activity, as in the words of the statute, is impaired in this particular case.
We've alleged several major life activities that my client is impaired in. First and foremost, we feel that her work activities, she's substantially limited in her work activities, and in that
she's certainly limited from working as a patient care registered nurse in a general services hospital. But is that sufficient under the statute? I mean, she certainly can perform a great number of other very valuable services.
Actually, she's restricted to only doing light duty labor work, and I believe that the regulations and the interpretive guidelines surrounding the ADA provide that if a person who suffers or has a back injury that prohibits that person from doing any heavy manual labor work would be restricted in the major life activity of working. And that's exactly the case we have here. My client,
given her educational background, she certainly isn't limited to simply doing heavy manual labor work, is she? And she's a professional person who can do some, who clearly has skills that are translatable in other environments.
Well, she needs to be, the court needs to look at her in light of people with similar education and abilities, and she is a registered nurse, as the court has recognized. However, she, based upon her back injury, she is limited to only sedentary work.
But, so you know, I want to go back to this regulation you mentioned because, of course, first of all, whatever we do needs to be consistent with what the Supreme Court has told us about the major life activity of working. And secondly, I'm very concerned with the breadth of the way you read this. It sounds to me, for example, that you would say that a lawyer who's confined to a wheelchair somehow is barred from the major life activity of work. Now, maybe the major life activity of walking, major life activity of doing other things, care for self, but not the major life activity of work. I mean, we need to be a little bit precise here. There, RNs work for insurance companies. They evaluate claims. They work in smaller doctor's offices. Some of them work with little babies who don't weigh more than 20 pounds. They work in many, many contexts, and it's hard for me to see that the particular weight restriction here, focusing on the major life activity of work, is enough to make her disabled.
Well, we're not saying that she's just disabled in lifting the weight restriction. The Memorial Medical Center has admitted that she's also restricted in work activities of lifting, sitting, standing in one place, bending, twisting, pushing, kneeling, and the majority of patient care nursing positions at Memorial. And if you look at what that involves, you're looking at 25 different areas of nursing that Memorial has in seven different locations.
But you're still talking, as Judge Ripple said, about patient care nursing activities. And I guess the point is there are many jobs in the national economy, that, including some that Memorial offered her, that require as a credential an RN degree, but they don't involve that kind of physical interaction with the patients.
Well, I guess our position is that even though she has these restrictions, she should be able to do the patient care nursing with some accommodation of those restrictions, because to eliminate her from a whole breadth of jobs that she'd be qualified for, we think violates the ADA. As you indicated, an attorney that's in a wheelchair would be.
But
fair.
He can work. It's walking that makes that person disabled. It's not an impairment in the ability to work.
Well, if you precluded him from doing any trial work, that would take him out of one class of jobs that he's not allowed to do. And that's what Memorial has done. They've said you can no longer do patient nursing care. They refuse to enter into any type of accommodation process with my client and just basically said that she was not disabled. And I believe that we not only hit whether or not she is disabled, she was regarded as disabled as covered by the ADA. It's clear that...
Well, what did she do in this patient placement coordinator job?
What did she have to do?
No.
She had to process new patients. She had to deal with patients. She had to transport them throughout the hospital. She was responsible for taking them to the restroom and if they needed to go there. She basically had to do patient care work in the patient placement position.
So it really was the same responsibilities that she had before?
It wasn't the same responsibilities, but she had the same exposure. She still was exposed to patients in that position. And that job description provided that she had to regularly lift 50 to 100 pounds on a daily basis. And that was clearly outside of her restrictions that she had according to the SCE. Memorial regarded her as being disabled. They told her, you can no longer work this certain class of jobs. You can no longer be in nursing, basically. That's what they told her. And we feel that that comes within the regarded as prong.
But, now, you know, the accommodations that she seemed to want for that active on the floor kind of nursing position seemed... Well, first of all, in the many decisions courts have held, this court has also held, that employers are entitled within a fairly broad range to define what are the essential functions of a job. And even if most of the time somebody manages to get another person there to help lift a patient or move them or transfer them, if a hospital thinks we need somebody who's able to respond right on the spot, that could be part of the job description. I think the patient coordinator position, the hospital was indicating, was probably an easier one to come to some sort of accommodation with her. But the hospital was concerned that what she really needs was somebody to just follow her around all day in case a patient falls or a patient needs some sort of odd twisting action to assist that person.
But that was based on pure speculation. Memorial presented no evidence as to the significance of that risk.
I thought they did say that her two back injuries in the past were both in that kind of context. Somebody was being assisted out of a restroom and they fell, or, you know, that indeed there was some evidence.
There is evidence that she did have those injuries while doing those work activities. However, under the analysis that this court is supposed to use, it's their burden to show that this risk is significant in some quantitative, measurable way. They did not do this.
But they certainly do say, we think this is a reasonable requirement. I'm not sure you're right about the burden of proof. You know, hospitals get sued all the time, you know, for nurses that drop a patient, and it might not matter. If it's only one person, if the risk is seen as rather high, if there's a mishap even with one individual.
But they presented no evidence as to the likelihood that this would occur.
Why did they have to, though? They said, we think this is what this type of nursing position requires, and your client can't do it.
Well, that goes to the second prong of she being regarded as being disabled by Memorial. I think the cases I cited show that the similar cases, like when an ADA committee decided that an employee could not do any jobs within a factory, that was sufficient to sustain a regarded as claim.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hayes. We'll hear now from Ms. McLaughlin.
Thank you, Your Honors. At the end of the day...
Before you get started, can you tell me, the first page of your brief, you tell us that the appellant's jurisdictional statement is incomplete and incorrect. And you go on to talk about a counter-jurisdictional statement. I didn't see anything wrong with her, with the plaintiffs, and I don't see how yours really differs.
Your Honor, I'm not exactly sure, but I believe what we were referring to was the way that she stated the issues for the case. So perhaps it wasn't the jurisdictional statement. It was her statement of the issues. I'm not exactly sure, though.
It just seemed sort of odd. I read your statement, then I looked at the appellant's brief, and it looks like it's a carbon copy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I believe we were taking issue with the way that she presented her statement of the issues.
All right, you can move on.
Thank you, Judge. At the end of the day, this case, I believe, really comes down to whether the plaintiff was a qualified individual with a disability who, with or without reasonable accommodation, could perform the essential functions of the job. We have spent much time in our briefs on whether or not she was disabled, and I don't believe that she was under the statute, and I'll address that in a minute. I don't believe that she has presented enough evidence to show that she was substantially limited in any major life activity. But really, even if she were disabled, she was not qualified. To be afforded protection, she must show two things. To be a qualified individual with a disability, she must first show that she met the job prerequisites. And if we look at the patient care RN job, she clearly met those. But she must also be able to show that she was able to perform the essential functions of the job with or without reasonable accommodation. The EEOC guidance on essential functions does put the burden of proof on the employer to show that it was an essential function. But Memorial has clearly met this burden. And I believe, Judge Woods, that when you were questioning plaintiff's counsel on burden, that she was referring to direct threat. We are not alleging direct threat in this case. We are alleging that she was not a qualified individual. But we have satisfied the burden of proof as to whether or not it was an essential function of the job for her to lift 50 pounds. It was clearly our judgment that it was. There was a written job description that said it was so. The written job description said that she spent, on an hourly basis, I should say, was required to lift between 50 and 100 pounds. And the consequences of not doing the function were that the patient would fall on the ground. The only thing that she really has in support of her claim that it wasn't an essential function are two prior RNs who were in patient care jobs. Tanika Boston, who filed an affidavit, who as a legal conclusion said that she didn't believe lifting was an essential function, and Ms. Ruth Ann Cope, who simply talked about lifting and that she would typically require or have a second person assist her in a lift. But neither of these two statements, which in and of themselves I don't believe are enough anyways, neither of these two statements address the issue of what would happen in the event of an unplanned lift. So I think
But I guess Ms. Hayes' point is that there's not enough evidence in the record about how frequently in the hospital setting and what you call an unplanned lift occurs.
Well, I don't believe that that is our burden. Our burden is to show that it was an essential function, and one of those things, or one of those indicia, is the amount of time spent performing the function, and that's in the job description that must occur on an hourly basis for a patient care RN.
But that would include both planned and unplanned, I suppose, in the job description.
That's right. I really think the issue of how often it may occur in terms of an unplanned lift goes to the consequences of what would happen if a nurse were unable to participate in an unplanned lift. Very similar, frankly, to what was stated by the EEOC years ago with the analogy of a firefighter who only once in his or her 50 or 25-year career may have to lift that person out of a burning building. But the consequences of that, the inability to do that, is that the person dies in the building. Similarly here, the inability to lift a patient who is falling on the ground or who is falling from the bed is that the patient falls on the floor and can suffer severe consequences. And the plaintiff herself, frankly, admitted this at page 329 of the record when I questioned her regarding and when you would give medication to a patient in a room, was there always some other employee with you? Answer, not always. But there was a CNA in there giving baths or making beds or something. Question, at all times. Answer, not always. Question, and if you had a patient that was sitting on the side of a bed and you were giving that patient medication to take and the patient began to fall out of the bed onto the floor, with your 50-pound lifting restriction, would you have been able to help that patient and not be in violation of your restriction? Answer, no, I would have called for help. Question, but by that time, the patient could have been on the floor, right? Answer, possibly. So I think plaintiff herself has indicated that, while perhaps not with respect to frequency of an unplanned lift, that clearly the consequences of being unable to do that is that the patient ends up on the floor. I don't believe that there is any reasonable accommodation, which is her burden to present, that she has presented that would reasonably accommodate that 50-pound lifting restriction. She really suggests three things. One is that she can get assistance from somebody like a certified nurse assistant, a CNA, to help her. Well, that would help you if you were doing a planned lift, transferring a patient from a gurney to a bed, but not in the event of an unplanned lift. She also talks about the fact that the hospital was looking into ergonomic lifts. Again, would work in the circumstance of a planned lift, but not an unplanned lift. And finally, she also indicates that Memorial should have considered just retaining her in her permanent light-duty job. However, the court has been clear before in its cases that is not what the ADA requires, to retain somebody in a permanent light-duty job.
Was there ever any consideration, or are there nursing positions, for instance, in a pediatric setting that would not require this 50 to 100-pound lifting?
There are some limited, what I will call direct patient care positions, as you have identified, not so much in a pediatric unit, but in a mother-baby unit, although it really would be in a neonatology unit where you're only caring for babies. Even a mother-baby unit, you're caring for both typically babies and mothers, and you would still have to be able to lift 50 pounds in the event the mother fell. But the hospital did actually engage in the interactive process and offer her reasonable accommodations throughout her employment and put her in the patient placement coordinator job.
In this respect, Ms. McLaughlin, what is your understanding of the state of the law with respect to the employer's obligation to identify and bring to the attention of the employee alternate positions?
I believe the state of the law is that the employer has to provide the employee with a listing of positions, assist them in that inquiry, and give them a reasonable amount of time to look into those jobs. But there is no requirement for the employer to place that individual in any job, that they have to engage in the interactive process by looking at open positions. Memorial had someone from Human Resources who worked with the plaintiff actually on two different occasions in January of 2003 and later in January of 2005 to attempt to do that. There were hundreds of positions that are open at the hospital at any one time. In the first instance, the plaintiff actually was presented with the patient placement coordinator position and ultimately filled that position. On the second occasion, she wanted the clinical case manager job. And I do note that with respect to the clinical case manager job, it is a bit telling in that that particular position had overhead lifting and bending and twisting requirements, which plaintiff herself states that if you take the FCE as medical evidence, which I don't believe that it was, but if you take that as medical evidence, she probably was not physically able to perform that job either.
You tell me, I just have a hard time understanding why this 50-pound lifting requirement is even necessary or reasonable here.
With respect to a patient care RN job?
Anybody. I mean, somebody, if you can lift 60 pounds, you qualify, but if you're worried about somebody in an unplanned falling situation, their chances are they're going to weigh twice as much as that, aren't they?
They probably are, Your Honor, but in the event somebody is falling, you're not necessarily taking the whole weight of the body as you would catch somebody. You may or you may not. So the weight was put fairly low in order to account for the situation where you're simply falling back on a nurse and they are lifting, in effect, 50 pounds, but not the entire weight of somebody's body. There was actually in the job description above 100 pounds, I think, was noted that the physical requirements for that was to lift on a daily basis as opposed to the hourly basis of 50 to 100 pounds. Getting back to the two jobs that she was offered in January of 2005, with respect to the first one, the LMRP analyst job, there she was simply not qualified for the job based on the prerequisites of the position, which required extensive coding experience and actually to be something that's called a certified coder. And she pointed to her qualifications as coding experience that she had had back in the 1980s. So she was not qualified for that position. The second one was the LMRP coordinator job, which, as I mentioned, had fairly stringent physical requirements, but even then required cardiac and laboratory experience because this was a job that was related to approval of Medicare funds. And the two areas that were most often kicked back by Medicare were cardiac and lab. So it was important for this position for the individual to have that kind of experience. Again, she had minimal qualifications with respect to cardiac and lab experience and therefore was not qualified for that position either. And in any event, that position was eliminated and was never filled by anybody. So at the end of the day, she was simply not qualified for the patient care RN job, nor for the LMRP coordinator or analyst jobs that she wanted in January of 2005. This is a situation where the hospital did offer her accommodations through leave of absences, through the offer of the patient placement coordinator job, as well as the clinical case manager job. And at the end of the day, with respect to the clinical case manager job, she turned it down. I would also like to address her retaliation claim. Memorial believes that there is certainly no direct evidence here of any retaliation as a result of her filing a charge, under the statute or a complaint in federal court. Likewise, there is no suspicious timing here in that it was an 8-month gap between the time that she filed her complaint and the time that she ultimately was terminated in January of 2005. If we then look at the indirect method of proving retaliation, she has not proven that either, in that she has not been able to prove with respect to the position of patient care RN that she was performing the job to the employer's expectations because of the inability to lift. And she doesn't have anybody that was similarly situated to her that was treated better. And with respect to the two other jobs, the LMRP coordinator and the LMRP analyst jobs, likewise, as I've stated before, with respect to the analyst job, she was simply not qualified based on her prior experience. With respect to the coordinator job, that job ultimately was eliminated, and in neither case did she point to anybody who was similarly situated but treated better. Her only comparison is Ruth Ann Cope, who likewise had a lifting restriction and who had been placed in an LMRP coordinator job about a year or 18 months prior. However, the job had changed to now require cardiac and lab experience, which she did not have. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. McLaughlin. How much time does Ms. Hayes have? Thank you.
Thank you. I believe that we have shown to the court that my client was substantially limited in the major areas of work activities based upon the fact that she was precluded from doing all patient care nursing at Memorial, which is the leading employer of nurses in the area. That's 25 different nursing units in 7 different locations that she was foreclosed from working, and we believe that's a class of jobs according to the interpretive guidelines, and that she then is covered by the ADA.
Why is that the class of jobs and not, say, nursing jobs in the area, which I assume is a much broader set of jobs? You're focusing on patient in-hospital patient care nursing jobs as opposed to just nursing jobs.
Memorial's website shows the different areas in which they employ nursing, and they in
but I'm
that,
saying there are even other employers of nurses surely in the area. Doctors probably
but
have
that would
nurses
involve
working
patient
for them
care and nursing also, and that would also require lifting.
We don't know what these other employers require, do we?
No, but we do know what Memorial requires for it, and they are the major employer in the area, and they do require the lifting requirement. And, again, Memorial never considered different alternatives. There was never...
But your opponent argues that there were, in fact, if you step back, lots of accommodations made for your client, including the leaves and the temporary position and the offers of alternative positions that would have accommodated her limitations.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. She was terminated in December of 2002. She was told she did not have a job at Memorial any longer, and if she wanted to have another job at Memorial, she would have to reapply, and before she would be allowed to reapply for any positions, she would have to take a functional capacity evaluation to determine her exact limitations. Now, we believe that that in itself violated the ADA. She was terminated without any interactive discussion to see if there was a way for her to remain in nursing at Memorial. And as Your Honor recognized, there are different areas within Memorial that would not require lifting. In fact, they do have job descriptions for nurses that do not require lifting or require lifting like once or twice per year. Memorial never even considered any of those alternatives before terminating her and telling her she could no longer work in nursing. Now, Memorial has someone in the HR department that specifically deals with nursing. When she went to HR to talk about her termination, she was not given the person who dealt with nurses to explore different alternatives at Memorial. She was given, she was told she could no longer work in nursing, period, as because of her restrictions. We feel that that clearly violated the ADA, and violated it not because for one thing, they terminated before there was ever any interactive discussion. They clearly regarded her as being disabled and unable to perform the jobs as a nurse, and we're asking the court to reconsider that. In addition, we feel that she's also disabled in the area, which I did not touch earlier, in the sexual reproduction area, that there is evidence that she can no longer have sex, which is a major life activity.
But why is that something that is Memorial's concern? I mean, how does that affect her ability to work or have this job or any other job?
The determination whether or not a person is disabled is the same if it's in public accommodation or in the employment setting. So you have to first get to that.
Doesn't there need to be some relevance between the limitation and the employer's action? I just don't see how that one links up, to tell you the truth.
Well, the courts have said differently that that does not have to be linked to your work environment, that that in itself is a life activity that's substantially limited.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you to both Ms. Hayes and to Ms. McLaughlin. The case will be taken under advisement.